A logo appears in bold, slanting letters over a blue planet in space. Turner. Now, in a black and white film, a soldier on horseback raises a bugle. Titles appear. John Ford and Miriam C. Cooper present Fort Apache. Now, Apache Indians ride through a sun-baked desert. This film is described for blind and visually impaired audiences by Descriptive Video Service, WGBH Boston. Described by Brian Gould and Samantha Manahan. Read by Peter Haydu. Funded by the U.S. Department of Education. For more information about DVS, call toll-free 1-800-333-1203 or write to our email address, dvs@wgbh.org. More credits. Starring John Wayne as Captain Kirby York, Henry Fonda as Lieutenant Colonel Owen Thursday, Shirley Temple as Philadelphia Thursday, and Pedro Armendariz as Sergeant Beaufort. In the desert, a mounted U.S. Army platoon trots in tight formation. Credits continue with Ward Bond, George O'Brien, Victor McLaughlin, Anna Lee, Irene Rich, Dick Foran, Guy Kibbe, Grant Withers, Jack Pennock, Ray Hike, Movita, Miguel Inclán, Mary Gordon, Philip Kiefer, Mae Marsh, Hank Wharton, and introducing John Agar. In a dance hall, soldiers and ladies link arms and take short marching steps. Credits continue. Musical score, Richard Hackman. Screenplay by Frank S. Nugent. Suggested by the story Massacre by James Warner Bella. Cinematography, Archie Stout, ASC. Film editor, Jack Murray. Assistant director, Lowell Farrell. Art direction, James Bassevi. Copyright 1948, Argosy Pictures Corporation. Sound, Frank Webster and Joseph I. Kane. Technical advisors, Major Philip Kiefer, USA, retired, and Catherine Spatz. Costume research, D.R.O. Hatswell. Special effects, Dave Kohler. Dance sequences, Kenny Williams. Research editor, Catherine Clifton. Arranger and conductor, Lucien Caillé. An Argosy Pictures production. An RKO Radio Pictures Incorporated release. Directed by John Ford. Now a stagecoach barrels through a desert valley. The six-horse team gallops along a dusty trail of sun-baked earth. Towering mesas dot the horizon, separated by miles of arid, scrub-covered wasteland. The stagecoach driver works the horse's reins while his grizzled partner watches the trail. Both men wear checked shirts, neckerchiefs, and cowboy hats. Inside the coach, a young lady wearing a wide-brimmed hat sits beside an army officer. The officer leans out of the window.
Come on,
driver!
Get in there, Rosie!
Driver!
How much farther to this Hassenpfeffer, whatever you call the confounded place?
Ashyampa? Oh, shouldn't be long now. Once over the rise, round the bend, then along the piece.
According to your schedule, we should have been there an hour ago.
Don't suppose we could have passed her, do you think?
Wait a minute, that.
Don't you worry, soldier boy. We'll get you there.
The young lady smiles.
Soldier boy.
What a country. 40 miles from mud hole to mud hole. Mule Creek, Dead Man's Squaw, Schmidt's Wells, Hangman's Flats, Hacienda. The end of the rainbow, Fort Apache. Fort Apache. Blast an ungrateful War Department that sends a man to a post out here.
Anyway, I'll be with you. I hated all those years you were in Europe.
Better there than here.
The young lady frowns.
I didn't mean it that way, Phil. It's just that after all I've done and been, to be shunted aside like this.
Trailing a cloud of dust, the stage rumbles past a towering rock butte, rising from the desert floor like a skyscraper. Under the endless sky, the coach rides on, dwarfed by the vast, barren landscape. The coach driver looks back toward his two well-dressed passengers.
We're coming in. Practically on schedule. Right, Frank?
Practically.
The coach speeds up an incline and arrives at an inn built at the base of a mesa. A few cowboys lean on a split rail fence, and an Indian woman weaves on a loom outside the rambling two-story brick building. The officer enters the inn first, followed by the drivers and the young lady, Phil. Inside the well-kept tavern, they're met by a plump older woman.
Mom and Bean.
Aye, I'm coming. Nice to it, boys.
Smooth's a rock.
How far is it to Fort Apache?
Oh, the fort's 35 miles south of here. What do you expect?
I telegraphed.
Oh, that telegraphs doesn't mean a thing. One day the wire's up, the next day they're...
35 miles south. Madam, is there a livery stable here?
No.
There must be some way to rent a vehicle.
A what?
A rig, any kind of rig.
Nothing fit for the lassie to ride in. Oh, my, that's a real bonny bonnet, miss. St. Louis?
Boston.
Oh, Boston, Massachusetts.
She puts Phil's hat on, and a ribbon dangles in front of her face. Phil turns the hat around.
Oh,
that's mighty pretty, Ma.
Oh, my. Oh, would you know like a wee cup of tea and get rid of the dust?
Thank you, if it isn't too much trouble.
Not a bit, lass, not a bit. Come on, right in here.
They leave the men in the tavern.
Son, how about a drink?
Gentlemen, I could use one.
The driver shakes his head.
Women.
He leans way back and spits. 10 feet away, a brass spittoon rocks from side to side. Now Phil enters a washroom.
There's your towel. You'll be as fresh as a daisy.
Thanks, Ma.
A bare-chested young man bends over a wash basin, groping for a towel. Stunned, Phil hands him a towel, then studies his broad shoulders and thick arms. Her pouty lips curve up in a smile as the strapping young man lifts his face.
Oh, I'm sorry, ma'am. I thought it was Ma. I beg your pardon, miss.
He snatches his clothes and hurries into the tavern, where he spots the officer and snaps to attention. The officer eyes the young man.
Who and what are you, mister?
Lieutenant Michael O'Rourke, sir. En route for duty at Fort Apache, sir.
Get in the uniform, mister.
Yes, sir.
Another wash-up back here, mister?
Through the lean-to, sir.
The officer leaves, and the stage drivers watch Michael put on his uniform.
Soldier.
He spits. The grizzled men walk out the front door. Outside, three soldiers on horseback escort a horse-drawn wagon. They climb up the hill to the inn and dismount. Each of the rugged, middle-aged soldiers wears a baggy wool uniform with suspenders, loosely tied neckerchiefs, and well-worn caps. Inside the tavern, Michael buttons his jacket. The roughneck soldiers burst in and beam at the smooth-faced young man in his tailored uniform.
Danny Ray! Uncle Festy! Timmy! Uncle Dan!
Gentlemen, gentlemen! Your manners!
The four soldiers stiffen and salute. Michael returns their salute, and a husky sergeant steps forward.
Sergeant Mulcahy, with ambulance and escort for Lieutenant Michael O'Rourke.
Very good, Sergeant. At ease.
At ease, he says.
Mulcahy grabs Michael, bends him over his knee, and spanks him. Phil returns from the washroom and watches with a smile.
How much you pay for it, Mickey boy?
$75.
Sorry, I could have swiped you one better than that.
Well, it's tailor-made.
Yeah, well, but look at the fit. A perfect soldier. What do you think of it, ma'am?
Wonderful.
Michael meets her gaze. Sergeant Mulcahy holds his cap over his heart.
Ma'am, this is my godson, Lieutenant O'Rourke. Many's the time he's come to me with a wet nose.
A sergeant spots the officer.
Tip-tip!
Everyone snaps to as the officer enters. Dressed in a crisp uniform, he wears his graying hair slicked back.
I am Colonel Thursday. I presume you have been sent for me?
No, sir.
What are you doing here?
Escorting the ambulance from Fort Apache for Lieutenant O'Rourke, sir.
Have you had no orders regarding me?
No, sir.
They couldn't have known of your arrival, sir.
That's obvious, mister. Unless it's the custom at Fort Apache to provide transportation for incoming second lieutenants and leave a commanding officer to travel Shank's mare.
You will, of course, sir, accept my ambulance.
Thank you, mister. Sergeant, we'll leave in exactly 1/2 hour.
Yes, sir.
Ma'am, get these men a drink and put it on my account.
We thank you, Colonel Carter.
Colonel Thursday steps over to Phil.
Oh, may I present Mr. O'Brien?
O'Rourke, sir.
O'Rourke. This is my daughter, Miss Philadelphia.
Philadelphia curtsies.
How do you do?
Michael bows.
Your servant, ma'am.
They sit beside each other on a bench while the four sergeants stand at the bar.
4 bottles of cool beer, Ma.
And I live the same, with a whiskey chaser.
On the bench, Michael sneaks a sidelong glance at Philadelphia. She catches him and smiles. Later on the trail, the sergeants escort Colonel Thursday and Philadelphia, who ride in the ambulance wagon. Colonel Thursday, a trim man with a thin mustache, sits upright and still. Philadelphia leans out of the window, and Thursday gives her a stern glare. Philadelphia wears her dark hair in long ringlets, which bounce as she turns her head. A smile crosses her full lips, and she opens her hat box, which has a mirror inside the lid. She trains the mirror on Michael, riding alongside the ambulance. Philadelphia's large, dark eyes sparkle as she watches the strapping Sergeant Major ride tall on his horse. Now, in a military hall, soldiers dressed in dark, formal uniforms dance with women wearing long, full dresses. The soldiers' well-shined boots step heel-toe, and the women's dresses swoosh as the couples turn lively, bouncing circles around the dance floor. Among the couples, one officer stands out. Tall and broad-shouldered, he moves smoothly and leads his grinning partner with quick, turning steps. At one end of the hall, the band follows their conductor swinging baton. Outside, the ambulance and escorts arrive at Fort Apache. A night sentry raises his rifle.
Halt! Who goes there?
The new commanding officer.
Holy moly!
No, the new commanding officer.
Inside, the couples waltz slowly to the music. Sergeant Beaufort, one of the escorts, enters.
Attention!
Colonel Thursday and Philadelphia walk in. Thursday, holding his cap in his white-gloved hands, surveys the room.
At your ease, gentlemen.
A couple approaches them, and the officer extends his hand.
Thursday?
Hello, Collingwood. How do you do, Mrs. Collingwood?
Well, thank you. Owen?
Mrs. Collingwood places her hand on Philadelphia's arm and smiles.
And this must be Philadelphia. You don't remember me, do you? Emily Collingwood? Your mother was my dearest friend.
Why, of course. Oh, I've heard so much about you.
Collingwood smiles at Colonel Thursday.
We didn't expect you.
So I see. Captain York!
The tall, handsome captain tosses his cigarette away.
I'm Captain York, sir. I bid you welcome, General Thursday.
Not a general, Captain. Man is what he's paid for. I'm paid in the rank of Lieutenant Colonel.
I'd remembered you as a general from the war, sir.
Very flattering. Didn't you receive my telegraph, Captain?
The wires have been down between here and Fort Grant for 2 days, sir. We've had no communications.
2 days? The break should have been repaired before this?
It's 110 miles to Fort Grant, sir.
Then I take it this dance is not in my honor.
It's a birthday dance, sir.
Birthday? Whose birthday?
General George Washington, sir. Shall I show you to your quarters, or will you remain?
Well, under the circumstances,
I... Miss Thursday?
With a beaming smile, Philadelphia gives her hat to her father, curtsies, and takes York's gloved hands. York leads her in a waltz, and the other couples join the dance. Elsewhere at the fort, Michael peers into the window of a neatly decorated soldier's quarters. He opens the door and smiles brightly.
Hi, Dad.
A man with graying hair sits alone at the dining table, reading. He looks up at Michael, then his eyes return to the book in his hands. With a deep breath, he carefully closes the book, stands up, and smiles.
Mickey.
He embraces Michael warmly. Mr. O'Rourke wears uniform pants and a vest. His short cropped hair accentuates his thick neck, sloping shoulders, and barrel chest. Mr. O'Rourke turns and blows his nose. Then he notices Michael peering into another room.
Woman of the house. Your son is home.
A woman appears in the kitchen doorway and runs to Michael.
Son!
Hi, Ma.
They embrace, and Mrs. O'Rourke kisses her son's cheeks.
Oh, how fine you look. But you're so tall. Oh, Michael, stand over beside the boy so I can see you.
The men stand back to back.
Oh, you're just exactly the same. Well, now come over here and sit down and tell me everything.
Gee, Ma, you haven't changed a bit. Nothing has.
Well, why would it? 4 years is not so long. Or did you think to find me grown gray completely?
Woman, I leave you alone with your son, Lieutenant Michael O'Rourke, sir. Have I the lieutenant's permission to leave, sir?
Sergeant Major O'Rourke has permission.
O'Rourke salutes.
Thank you, sir.
Then whacks his son in the belly and joins the sergeants outside.
God's blessing on you this day, Sergeant Major.
Boys, I'm not a drinking man, as you know, but there are times. And tonight, if the sutler's door is still open...
Michael, darling, if it ain't, I'll kick the door down with my bare fist.
Morning. Philadelphia wakes with a start and sits up in bed. Outside, soldiers raise the stars and stripes up a tall flagpole. In her bedroom, Philadelphia puts on a dressing gown and hurries to the top of the stairs.
Dad! Dad!
She peers down the stairs to the first floor. Finding no one, she steps out onto her second-story balcony. From the railing, Philadelphia watches the activities of the fort below. Situated between scrub-covered hills, the stone buildings and tents of Fort Apache surround a central yard. Dozens of troops on horseback, covered wagons, and horse teams crisscross the sun-baked yard, kicking up clouds of dust. Michael, dressed in his tailored uniform, approaches the colonel's quarters. He steps onto the porch and glances at two cards in his white-gloved hand. Then he goes to the back steps and peers in a window.
Good morning.
Philadelphia stands at the top of the stairs.
It's all right. There's no one here but me, and I've been up for simply ages. Did you want to see Father or me?
Well, neither really.
Oh.
I just called to leave my card.
Oh, how nice. But if you didn't want to see me, I mean, if you don't want to see us, then what do you want to leave your card for?
I didn't say I didn't want to see you.
Why, you did so. I asked you if you wanted to see Father or me, and you said your exact words, well, neither really.
Well, what I meant to say was I didn't expect to see either of you.
Well, who did you expect to see? After all, we do live here.
She sits on the steps and toys with her hair. Michael stares down at his card.
Why don't you sit down?
Michael sits next to her, knocking his scabbard against the wall. He keeps his back straight and stares firmly ahead. Philadelphia gazes at him and smiles. From the yard, Captain York rides up to the house. Clean-shaven and ruggedly handsome, York wears a cowboy hat and neckerchief with his uniform. He climbs over the porch railing and grins.
Good morning, good morning.
Fair dancing, partner.
Good morning, sir.
Relax, Mickey. Got some bad news for you. You've been assigned to my troop. Michael Shannon O'Rourke, Lieutenant, United States Army. Even your calling card's already, Mickey, eh?
He can keep his old cards.
Oh, he can't do that. Protocol requires it. An officer, upon reporting to a new post, must wait upon his commanding officer at the first possible moment. He will leave his card.
He will leave an additional card for each lady in the commanding officer's family.
All other officers on the post will in turn leave their cards at the quarters of the incoming officer, right?
Right. Now do you understand?
It was just a duty call?
That's it, just a duty call. But there's nothing in the regulations that says a commanding officer's daughter should receive such cards on her back porch in her nightie.
Pish-tosh. This is not a nightie. It's a dressing gown, isn't it?
I wouldn't know.
And I haven't received any cards anyway.
Well, hand them over to her, Mickey. Oh, I get it, Miss Thursday. The lieutenant expected someone to meet him at the door with a silver salver.
A what?
A silver salver. He'd drop the cards in that and hurry away. You don't happen to have a silver salver, do you?
A silver salver? Our things haven't even arrived. Why, last night I slept on a horse blanket.
Now Colonel Thursday arrives at the fort headquarters.
Attention! Sergeant Major O'Rourke, sir.
At ease. Did you say O'Rourke?
Yes, sir.
He seems to be full of O'Rourkes. Have the trumpeter sound officer's call.
Officer's call?
How long have you been in the Army, O'Rourke?
United States Army, 15 years, sir.
And you've heard of officer's call? Have it sounded.
Yes, sir. You're right, sound officer's call.
Now?
No, next Christmas, you don't need. How long have you been in the Army? Then you've heard of officer's call sounded.
Later, Thursday addresses a half dozen officers.
War Department, Washington, D.C., special orders number 687. One. Lieutenant Colonel Owen Thursday is hereby relieved of his present duties and will proceed to Fort Apache, territory of Arizona, and upon arrival will assume command of that post. Travel directed and so forth and so forth. By direction of the Secretary of War, William B. Stafford. In compliance with these orders, gentlemen, I take command of the regiment. Relieving Captain Kirby York, who's returned to his troop. Captain Collingwood is relieved of the duties of regimental adjutant and returned to his troop. Lieutenant Gates is appointed adjutant. At ease, gentlemen. Gentlemen, I did not seek this command, but since it's been assigned me, I intend to make this regiment the finest on the frontier. I fully realize that prolonged duty in a small outpost can lead to carelessness and inefficiency and laxity in dress and deportment. I call it to your attention that only one of you was reported here this morning properly dressed. The uniform, gentlemen, is not a subject for individual, whimsical expression. We're not cowboys at this post, or freighters with a load of alfalfa. Mr. Murphy.
O'Rourke, sir.
Mr. O'Rourke, will you step forward? Gentlemen, I call your attention to Mr. O'Rourke's dress. Being fresh from West Point, Mr. O'Rourke has not forgotten Army regulations. I trust my other officers will remember them in the future. And I will insist they be enforced throughout the command. Understand me, gentlemen, I'm not a martinet. But I do want to take pride in my command. We here have little chance for glory or advancement. While some of our brother officers are leading their well-publicized campaigns against the great Indian nations, the Sioux and the Cheyenne, we are asked to ward off the gnat stings and flea bites of a few cowardly digger Indians.
Your pardon, Colonel. You'd hardly call Apaches digger Indians, sir.
You'd scarcely compare them with the Sioux, Captain.
No, I don't. The Sioux once raided into Apache territory. Old-timers told me you could follow their line of retreat by the bones of their dead.
I suggest the Apache has deteriorated since then, judging by a few of the specimens I've seen on my way out here.
Well, if you saw them, sir, they weren't Apaches.
We'll discuss the Apache some other time, Captain. The immediate point, gentlemen, is that I hope to know you all better. If we don't understand each other now, we soon will. Questions? Good morning, gentlemen. You may return to your breakfasts or your other duties. Captain Collingwood, will you remain?
Michael holds the door for the departing officers. His father gives a swift point, and they join Captain York outside.
Gentlemen, are there any questions? If there are none, I intend to follow orders and have breakfast. Good morning, gentlemen.
Report to your troop. Sir.
Michael obeys his father. In the office, Collingwood stands before Thursday's desk.
Nothing personal in this, Sam.
No explanations, Owen. We've never had them before. Although once I tried.
There was nothing to explain.
No, nothing. You did what you did, and rode to glory. I did what I did, and wound up at Fort Apache. Well, you wound up here too.
Oh, by thunder, I've not wound up. Not by a jugful. They've pushed me aside, sent me out to this tenpenny post, but they'll not keep me buried. I'll find something.
This isn't a country for glory, Owen.
I'll take my risks. I always have.
Well, then, all I can do is wish you good luck. And I wish you that sincerely.
Thank you, Sam. You have a drink?
He takes out a bottle and a glass.
No thanks, Owen. It's a little early in the day, even for me.
Thursday glares. Collingwood walks out and finds Sergeant Major O'Rourke in the outer office.
Anything new about my transfer?
Sorry, sir, nothing yet.
Thank you.
Collingwood leaves.
O'Rourke.
Yes, sir.
I'll require a mount. Have two or three brought over for my selection.
Yes, sir. O'Rourke.
The barrel-chested Sergeant Major strides into Thursday's office.
Sir.
This Lieutenant O'Rourke. Are you by chance related?
Not by chance, sir. By blood. He's my son.
I see. How did he happen to get into West Point?
It happened by presidential appointment, sir.
Are you a former officer, O'Rourke?
During the war, I was a major in the 69th New York Regiment, the Irish Brigade, sir.
Still, it's been my impression that presidential appointments were restricted to sons of holders of the Medal of Honor.
That is my impression, too, sir. Will that be all, sir?
Yes, Sergeant, it will.
O'Rourke leaves. Thursday steps behind his desk and gazes out a window. Now, in Thursday's quarters, Philadelphia trots downstairs wearing a white polka dot dress. In the sparsely furnished living room, a duffel bag sits at the foot of a narrow cot. Philadelphia picks up her father's rumpled nightshirt as if to fold it, then quickly rolls it up and stuffs it into the duffel. Next, she picks up her father's heavy wool coat off the cot and hangs it on a coat rack near the door. The wooden peg snaps and the coat tumbles to the floor. She tries another peg, and the whole rack rips off the wall. Setting her hands on her hips, Philadelphia eyes several unopened trunks near the fireplace and kicks her father's riding boot across the room. She sits on one of the trunks and looks around the unfurnished room with a pout. She brightens. With a growing smile, Philadelphia hurries outside. Next door, three soldiers relax on a long front porch. Philadelphia walks down the porch and smiles at each man. They tip their hats in return. Near the end of the porch, a woman knits in a chair.
Good morning. Good morning. Excuse me, could you tell me where Mrs. Collingwood lives?
Oh, right in there, dear.
Thank you.
Philadelphia peers in an open doorway.
Good morning.
Philadelphia. Philly.
I know it's terribly early to call, but...
Nonsense. Come in, dear. I'm so glad to see you.
I was just passing it. My, what a beautiful sideboard. And those candlesticks.
They were my Aunt Martha's. I was her favorite niece. So when she died, she left her fortune to a home for stray cats. And the candlesticks to me.
They're lovely. Everything is. But our place, it's so bare and so dirty.
Oh, you poor child.
And there's no water. Mrs. Collingwood.
Aunt Emily.
Aunt Emily. What does a woman do in the army? Our things haven't... We haven't even got a coffee pot, and... Do I get someone to help me, or...
Owen Thursday, that man. Now, don't you fret, dear. In times of trouble, we call on Mrs. O'Rourke.
Mrs. O'Rourke?
Mrs. O'Rourke. Martha, where's Mrs. O'Rourke?
Mrs. O'Rourke! Mrs. O'Rourke!
Mrs. O'Rourke!
Oh, yes,
Mrs. O'Rourke! Mrs. O'Rourke!
Michael's mother hurries along the porch.
Mrs. Collingwood? Yes, sir? Mary, this is Colonel Thursday's daughter. And this is Mrs. O'Rourke, the wife of our Sergeant Major. And the mother of a very fine young officer.
How do you do, Mrs. O'Rourke?
Sam told me about Michael's arrival. How happy you must be.
Oh, I am.
How does he look?
Oh, he looks wonderful. I mean, he makes a very fine officer.
Mary, this poor child has to set up house in that bare barn.
Don't you worry, I'll attend to everything.
Mrs. Collingwood smiles at Philadelphia.
Well, he is nice.
In the yard, Michael leads rifle practice. The sergeants watch, shaking their heads.
Order! Hon! Hon! Ho! Hey! All right, now let's try it together. Carry! Hon!
Wind-up recruits pick up their rifles.
Hey, put that piece on the ground! Pick it up!
One recruit holds up his rifle.
Put that piece down, soldier!
Well, Captain, when you say carry arms, you mean to carry this little bitty gun?
Get back in line!
Yes, sir. I was only asking.
Shut up and put your hat on.
Yes, sir.
I'm sorry, soldier. I was only trying to tell you.
The sergeants lean on a horse railing and smoke their pipes. Michael's father joins them.
How's the boy doing, Festus? Oh, he's doing fine, Michael. But nevertheless, he's an officer and a gentleman. And that's no job for a gentleman.
O'Rourke puffs out his chest.
Well, then. Come on.
He walks up to his son with a grin.
Would Lieutenant O'Rourke please step over to this table, sir?
But these men, they're pretty rough.
Ah, but the sergeants. The sergeants can take over the drill, sir.
Very well. Sergeants, continue with the drill.
Yes, sir. Now, the first thing to do after becoming a soldier is to look like a soldier. To look like a soldier, you got to stand like a soldier. Suck in that belly. Get that hand out of your pocket. Straighten up those legs. Pull those feet out. Get that chin up.
Wait a minute, Daniel, darling. Just one moment.
Wielding a big stick like a baseball bat, Sergeant Mulcahy grins at one of the fresh recruits.
I'm going to make this squad the finest body of men in the American Army.
He glares at one man, then takes a step and whirls back around. The soldier stiffens. Mulcahy points to another recruit.
Get back in line there. Hold your head up. Head nice straight to the front. Heels together and your toes apart. At the approximate angle of 45 degrees. I've never seen such a ragged line. Just come out and look at yourselves.
Get back.
He smacks a recruit with his stick and they get back in line. Big and brawny, Sergeant Mulcahy looks over the 11 new recruits with a toothy grin.
Now, is there any man here from Tipperary? Is there any man here from Cork?
The men stand at attention. Some wear dungarees and shirts. Others wear jackets and ties.
Is there any man here from County Sligo?
Yes, sir.
Mulcahy grips the man's lapel.
Now, we don't want to show any favoritism about this, but you're now an acting corporal.
The new corporal grabs a stick.
Now, Sergeant Shattuck will take you in the manual of arms. That is by numbers, meaning one, two...
Mulcahy grabs the new corporal by the collar and throws him down.
Come on, get back in line there. Get on your feet. Get in here.
Outside the horse stables, Sergeant Major O'Rourke shows Michael a dark brown steed.
It's from your mother and myself.
Oh, gee, Dad, he's a beauty.
He's thoroughbred and mortal. Get on him, ride him.
He pats the horse and holds its reins while his son climbs into the saddle. Michael spurs the horse toward a split rail fence. The horse jumps and easily clears the top rail. Michael reins his horse around for another go. They jump the fence again and ride back to the stable.
Hey, Dad, he's a beauty.
Ah, he's a leopard, that one. Go on, take him.
Michael rides into the yard where the sergeants march the new recruits in tight formation. He slows, then rides alongside them.
It's Sergeant John McCafferty and Corporal Donahue. They make us march up to a cracking gallant company queue. The drums they roll upon my soul, but that's the way we go. 20 miles a day on beans and hay, a regular army
roll.
There's Sergeant John McCafferty and
the sergeants stand shoulder to shoulder with the troops and hold their sticks under their arms like rifles. Michael, now leading the march, salutes to Colonel Thursday and Captain York.
40 miles a day of beans and hay, the regular army.
Those recruits, Captain?
Yes, sir. First day's drill.
You show promise. A good officer, that O'Rourke.
West Point training, Colonel.
Evening. As Thursday arrives home, a young lady greets him with his daughter.
Surprise! Well, what do you think of your new quarters?
Well, did you do all this yourself?
Naturally. Even move the piano. No, Mrs. Collingwood and Mrs. O'Rourke helped me. They were wonderful. Mrs. Collingwood gave me these things and the drapes and Mrs. Grayson gave this great Uncle Abraham. He was a very famous man. And Mrs. Tompkins gave us that chair, and little Mrs. Bates gave us the stool, only it doesn't quite match the room. And Francisco gave us Guadalupe.
How'd you do?
She's our cook.
Guadalupe hurries into the kitchen. The colonel looks around his freshly decorated house, then kisses his daughter on the forehead.
I'm proud of you. Someday you're going to be a proper soldier's wife.
She points to a leather armchair.
And Dr. Wilkins wanted you to have this. It's a little rump spur.
What?
But very comfortable. And I help with the dinner.
She goes into the kitchen. With a relaxed grin, Colonel Thursday takes a cigar out of a brass container and notices a calling card placed in a salver. Squinting, he holds the card at arm's length, then picks up a candle and lights the cigar from its flame. His gaze returns to the calling card, and he puffs smoke. Glancing about the room, Thursday studies Dr. Wilkins' leather armchair placed beside the hearth. He drops into the armchair, and the back legs collapse. Philadelphia and Guadalupe burst into the room and smile at the colonel, slumped in the fallen chair. The women take hold of his arms and hoist him to his feet. Thursday pulls his jacket straight and takes a few puffs on his cigar.
I'm sorry, I forgot to tell you. It does that sometimes.
Thursday looks at the chair, then at his daughter. Guadalupe opens the door and a soldier enters.
Good evening, sir. I'm sorry to interrupt, but Fort Grant is flashing a general alarm, sir.
Have any of our patrols reported, Mr. Gates?
No, sir.
Keep the wire open to Fort Grant. I'll return to the headquarters immediately.
Yes, sir.
Gates leaves.
My cap and gloves. What's your name?
Guadalupe.
Thursday points to his head and hands, and Guadalupe hurries off. Philadelphia draws near to her father.
But, Dad, dinner.
Don't wait for me. I may be hours.
Philadelphia stares down at the floor. Her father wraps his arm around her shoulders.
There'll be other dinners, Phil.
Yes, Dad.
Guadalupe brings Thursday's cap and gloves. After he leaves, she closes the door, then turns to Philadelphia.
Ay, pobrecita, señorita.
It's all right, Guadalupe. We'll cook other dinners together.
They share a smile. Then Philadelphia leaves. Later, at the Collingwoods, Michael and Captain York join Sam and Emily for dinner. The men stand, and Mrs. Collingwood opens the door. It's Philadelphia.
Good evening,
Miss Thursday.
Oh, having a party. I'm terribly sorry.
Now, you come right in, dear. It's just a little welcome for Lieutenant O'Rourke.
Your servant, ma'am.
Couldn't have come at a better time. Could she now, gentlemen?
No one more well,
indeed.
Now then, who shall get this prize?
Our host, of course.
I don't trust you, Sam Collingwood. No, you shall sit here, on my right, next to Captain York.
Thank you.
So Lieutenant O'Rourke can have a good look at you.
Well, I don't know whether that's fair.
Why not?
Because you'll have to look at him.
Oh, I hope she does. You don't drink wine, do you?
No, thank you.
Good girl, Philadelphia.
Coffee, dear. Thank you.
Were you born in Philadelphia?
No, Pomfret, Connecticut. I was named after my mother.
Oh, she was born in Philadelphia.
No, Pawtucket, Rhode Island. She was named after grandmother. Grandmother was the first Philadelphia in our family.
Oh, then she was...
No, Provincetown, Massachusetts.
Let's talk about horses. Do you ride the Phil?
Yes, I do.
Well, good. We'll have to order some nice young officer to take you riding.
Emily.
Should we leave the gentlemen with their cigars, Phil?
All right.
Have a cigar, Kirby, and I'll join you.
I can't tell you how wonderful it is to have you here at the post, Mrs. Collingwood.
Oh,
Oh, I think you'll get along, even without me.
Without?
We're just marking time, you know. Sam has applied for transfer to West Point as instructor.
Oh, I didn't know. When are you leaving, Captain?
Leaving? Leaving for where? I'm not going anywhere. Leave my own party?
Phil meant for the academy, Sam.
Oh, that. Soon, I hope. Or they may reject me.
Oh, Sam. Sam, they couldn't.
I've had my application a long time, dear.
You know how the Army is, Sam.
Yes, and I know its opinion of me.
You know our opinion of you, too. Isn't that enough?
And you know what the men think of you, sir.
Collingwood raises his glass.
Captain, Lieutenant, my compliments.
Outside, a sergeant plays an accordion and another strums a guitar. An older man stands with them, wearing a long white doctor's coat. On the porch, Michael inches closer to Philadelphia. One of the sergeants takes a pipe from his mouth.
Well then, oh, Genevieve, I'd give the world to live again the lonely past. The rose of youth was dew impearled, but now it withers in the blast. I see thy face in every dream, my waking thoughts are all of thee. Thy glance is in the starry beam that falls along the summer sea.
He puffs on his pipe.
Oh, Genevieve, sweet Genevieve, the years may come, the years may go, but still the hand of memory weaves the blissful dreams of long ago.
The doctor hands the singer a flask.
Thank you, Quincannon, thank you. One before each meal. Sergeant! Take him back to the guardhouse.
The sergeants march off.
Sergeant John McCafferty and Corporal Donahoe.
This is against all tradition. A man comes to serenade a lady, and what does he find? Her husband and half the regiment on the balcony. I am crushed.
You're a faint heart, Doctor. You only serenade when husbands are around.
And for good reason, ma'am. Seeing what a sorry, romantic figure I cut, the husband takes pity on me and brings out his best port. Oh, good evening, Captain Collingwood.
This is blackmail, but you'll find the 18th.
I know where it is. Last time I looked, there were four bottles of 46. I expect to find my property intact.
The insolence of the man.
One, two, three. That's all here. You're an honorable man. And since this is an occasion, your glasses.
He pours drinks.
Come. Let's drink a toast to the young people. It's Thursday. Mickey.
Michael and Philadelphia dally on the porch.
Then you will go riding with me tomorrow.
Of course. If you really want me to.
She steps to the edge of the porch. Michael follows. Inside, Dr. Wilkins raises his bottle.
To the Colonel's lady and Mickey O'Rourke. Here's luck.
They'll need it, poor darlings.
Outside, Philadelphia gazes up at Michael, then strolls into the evening shadows. Michael follows a few steps behind. Another day. Outside the horse stables, the new recruits wear army caps and dark uniform shirts. The four sergeants, Mulcahy, Quincannon, Shattuck, and Beaufort, carry horsewhips.
Attention!
The recruits stiffen.
Men,
Today we're going to put you on the horses. No more walking. And by the time we get through with you, you'll be riding like senators to all of you. And your rough riding sergeant will be Sergeant Beaufort.
Beaufort smiles and bows.
Relax!
The men clasp their hands behind their backs. Beaufort steps up.
Gentlemen, this is a horse. You will observe it has no saddle. The reason it has no saddle is because it'll be easier for you to stay on without the saddle. Now, before we progress, did any of you gentlemen have the honor of serving with the Southern Arms during the late war between the states?
Yes, sir. I had the pride, sir, of serving with Bedford Forrest.
I am proud to shake your hand.
Thank you, sir.
I hope you have the pleasure of buying me a drink on your next payday.
An honor, sir.
You are now an acting corporal.
Sergeant,
please. Thank you, sir.
Please, Sergeant Mulcahy.
I'll let them have one.
And now, gentlemen, this gallant soldier, this member of the greatest cavalry force that ever lived, will show you Yankees how to ride.
The lanky Southern recruit hops on the horse's back and gallops off across the yard.
Now you see how easy it is, gentlemen. Gentlemen, to your horses. Who will be the first volunteer?
I am.
One recruit runs to a horse. A sergeant grabs him by the ankles and tosses him clear over the horse's back.
Come on, get up here.
Get up, up in here.
My gentlemen always remount.
A sergeant helps the recruit to his feet, then pushes him into the horse's flank.
Stay on your horses, men. And if you fall off, get on again. He said, it's an order in the army and a custom that when you fall off your horses, you mount again like a gentleman.
A horse rears up and throws off its recruit. The young soldier stands up and salutes. Another recruit gets thrown and tumbles into the dirt.
Now, come on, get on that horse again, will you?
A recruit sprints behind a runaway horse and grabs its tail.
Come back here with that horse!
He keeps up for several strides, then falls in a cloud of dust.
Come on! Get up there!
One recruit wraps his arms around his horse's neck. Another waves frantically as his horse bucks and kicks beneath him. The sergeants stand calmly amid the rearing steeds and scrambling recruits.
Get back!
What's the matter with
you? He's close together. Everybody just get right where they are.
A passing rider loses his mount and drops into Quincannon's arms.
Stay on that horse, will you?
They hoist two recruits onto one horse. The horse rears up and throws the second man off. Galloping across the dusty yard, the southern recruit returns and dismounts. He hastily salutes to Sergeant Beaufort and points to his bare head.
Sir, I beg to report I lost my Yankee cap.
Beaufort shakes his hand.
Thank you. Thank you, sir.
With a toothy grin, Beaufort shakes his hand again.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Now in the desert, Michael and Philadelphia ride across the dusty, scrub-covered terrain. They near a towering butte and stop their horses.
Isn't this wonderful? What's that over there?
Blue Mesa.
Can't we go there?
Well, it's not as close as it appears, Miss Thursday.
Are you anxious to return to the fort, Lieutenant?
Oh, no, Miss Thursday.
Don't you like the name of Phil, Michael?
Of course I do, Phil.
He looks at her and grins. Phil smiles shyly. They ride down a sloping hill to a flat desert plain which stretches to the horizon. The long ribbons of Philadelphia's hat flow in the breeze as she and Michael ride side by side. They stop, and Michael points with his gloved hand.
Right over there, that's where the telegraph line is. That's our main headache around here. Runs from here to Fort Grant.
You mean where the smoke is?
Smoke?
Is it an Indian signal?
No, it's not an Indian signal.
At Fort Apache, the officers meet at headquarters.
The line went dead, sir. Right in the middle of the last void.
Meacham reports Diablo's band decamped from reservation. Last seen headed S-O-U-T. South, obviously, or southeast or southwest.
Which means they may have crossed 10 miles from here or 200. We can't patrol all of it.
I'm fully aware of that, Captain. Think they're headed for the border to join Cochise?
That's my opinion, sir.
And these are the three main passes to Mexico?
Well, there are others, but those are the ones the Apache use most.
Two of them in our patrol area. Captain York, you and Mr. O'Rourke take a troop and patrol the area.
Mr. O'Rourke is not on the post, sir.
Why not?
He's out riding, sir, with your daughter.
He what? How long ago? When did they go out?
Almost 3 hours past, sir.
Three?
Are you sure it's that long ago?
Positive, sir.
Bastard young fool. O'Rourke, hasn't that idiot son of yours sense enough to know this country's not safe? Taking my daughter riding.
Your daughter is just as safe with my son, sir, as she would be with any man.
How safe is that with the Apaches on the warpath?
In the desert, Michael and Phil near the telegraph line.
Get back!
Philadelphia turns around and rides away. Below Michael's horse, we glimpse a soldier's tattered pants and charred feet. Two burned soldiers lie in a smoldering pile of debris, propped up against iron wagon wheels. Michael dismounts and shakes out a dust-covered neckerchief from the ground. He scans the area, then remounts and joins Philadelphia, who waits beside a telegraph pole away from the smoking wreckage. Together, they gallop away, churning up dust as they tear down the trail. Philadelphia's hat flies off her head. Michael rears his horse around as Philadelphia rides on. Without stopping, Michael leans down in his saddle and snatches Phil's hat from the ground. He breaks into a gallop and rejoins Philadelphia, racing down the trail. Now at headquarters.
Collingwood, take out a patrol at once. York, pass the word A and B. Tell them to turn to full field equipment. Rations for a week.
Collingwood strides out to the porch and stops suddenly. Across the yard, Michael and Philadelphia ride in at a full gallop. Collingwood goes to the door.
Well, thirsty.
Clutching Philadelphia's hat, Michael dismounts and waits. Thursday and York hurry outside and approach him. Michael salutes.
Repair wagon, sir. Burned. Two troopers, Barry and Williams, dead. Spread eagle on the wheels. Roasted.
Thursday takes a step, then turns back.
And my daughter saw all that?
Yes, sir.
I'll take your report inside, mister.
Yes, sir.
He goes to his daughter.
Are you all right, Phil?
Yes, Dad, I'm all right.
He strokes her forehead and turns to Dr. Wilkins.
Take her inside, will you?
Mrs. Collingwood, Mrs. O'Rourke, and two other women wrap Philadelphia in their arms. Thursday watches them take her away, then locks stairs with Sergeant Major O'Rourke. The colonel moves on, and O'Rourke follows him into headquarters.
Must have jumped them at sundown. It's a pretty big party. 25 or 30 anyway. Escalero Apaches. I found this.
Michael hands over the neckerchief from the wreckage.
Blood.
Apaches carry off their dead.
Some Escaleros, all right. Diablo's band. You say the trail led off to the south?
It headed that way, sir, but...
You didn't follow it long enough to find out?
No, sir. I couldn't take that risk with... Miss Thursday, sir.
Your caution, Mr. O'Rourke, is commendable, but somewhat belated. My compliments on the completeness of this report. It speaks a knowledge of the savage Indian, which I am sure you did not acquire at the military academy. I call it to your attention that in taking my daughter riding without bespeaking my permission, you have been guilty of behavior more consistent with that of an uncivilized Indian than an officer and a gentleman. If I have not made myself sufficiently clear, mister, I will add this. You will not again ride with my daughter. And for reasons which I feel it unnecessary to go into, you will avoid her company in the future.
But, Colonel...
I speak to you not only as your commanding officer, but as Philadelphia's father. I think I am within a father's rights, Captain York. My daughter's life and safety are precious to me.
And to me, sir, I assure you.
Then you will all the more readily bow to my wishes.
Yes, sir.
Colonel Thursday returns to the map on his desk.
Now, mister, You say the break was here?
Michael studies the map.
Yes, sir.
Excellent. Captain York, send a wagon and a detail to repair the wires and bring back the bodies.
Yes, sir. Sergeant Major, assemble a platoon from aid troop.
A platoon? I said a detail, Captain. An officer and four men.
But the Apaches may still be around.
I'm running a command, not a debating society, Captain York.
A detail of four men. I will be in command.
Mr. O'Rourke will be in command.
Mr. O'Rourke in command. Have them take 60 rounds of carbine ammunition per
man. That's a lot of ammunition for men who've been trained to shoot. 30 will be ample.
30 will be ample. And 18 per revolving pistol. You'll call for volunteers.
With the colonel's permission, I volunteer.
Permission refused. Carry out your orders, Sergeant Major. You leave within the quarter hour, Mr. O'Rourke. Questions?
Michael salutes, then turns on his heel and joins his father outside.
Michael. Michael, you know what's expected of you now.
Sure, Dad, I know.
O'Rourke turns to the bugler.
Right. Go get Quinn Cannon out of the guardhouse. Wait. O'Feeney, go to the stables and find Mulcahy, Shattuck, and Johnny Reb. Tell them they're volunteering for an extra hazardous mission. Above and beyond the call of duty. Tell them their regiment is proud of them. Now get going, the whole is. Come on, come on.
Back in the colonel's house.
You spoke before of a platoon from A Troop, Captain York. I suggest you assemble it. Light marching equipment, but full bandoliers. We'll leave in 30 minutes. I will command, you will accompany.
You mean we're going to trail the wagon?
At a striking distance. Collingwood, you remember the paper that Captain Robert E. Lee wrote when he was at the Point? The one on the trap is a military weapon. I do not share the popular view of Captain Lee's ability as tactician, but that paper impressed me, particularly the maneuver that Genghis Khan employed in the Battle of Keensha in 1221. You recall? Hadn't you better be moving, Captain?
Yes, sir.
What, no debate this time, Captain?
No debate, sir. No questions.
In the desert, Michael and Sergeant Beaufort ride on horseback. The other sergeants ride in a covered wagon with a 6-horse team. At Fort Apache, Thursday wears a kepi hat with a suncloth and white gloves.
Troop is ready, sir.
You're not properly uniformed, Captain, nor are your men. You look like scratch farmers on market day. Your hat should be creased fore and aft like a fedora, and I don't like exposed galluses.
Yes, sir.
Thursday and York get on their horses. They ride past a line of about 30 soldiers on horseback. Thursday's suncloth flaps on the back of his neck as he looks over the platoon.
Column of twos, Captain.
Fight twos by the right flank! Front! Hello!
Two by two, the troops ride out of the fort. From a porch, Sergeant Major O'Rourke watches them go. His wife slips her arm around his and clasps his hand. He turns to her.
About your business.
Mrs. O'Rourke lowers her eyes and steps away. In the desert, Michael and Beaufort arrive at the smoldering massacre site. Driving the covered wagon, Quincannon clenches a pipe in his teeth and reins his horses to a stop. Sergeant Beaufort, trim with a dark mustache, places his gloved hand on a charred wagon wheel and gazes distantly.
Get busy with the wire, Sergeant.
Michael nods to the others.
All right, you men, get out those blankets and work fast.
Barry and Williams. Many a pint I had with both of them.
Mulcahy shakes his fists.
Why, you...
Mulcahy and Shattuck glance back at Michael and bow their heads. The sergeants unload a stretcher and a blanket from the wagon. Crouched behind a rock, Michael looks through binoculars. He lifts the brim of his creased fedora and squints, then returns to the binoculars. Bullets ricochet off his rock.
Johnny Reb, drop it! Then let's get out of here, fast!
Michael and Beaufort mount up. The three other sergeants climb into the covered wagon, and they charge away from the wreckage. Mounted soldiers spur their horses through a narrow pass and lead the wagon into the open, sun-baked desert. From the top of a nearby ridge, 30 Indians on horseback watch the fleeing soldiers. One of the Indians points his rifle to the sky. Waving rifles and tasseled sticks, the mounted war party charges down the ridge after the five-man army detail. The sergeant's horse team gallops at breakneck speed. Behind them, the Indians aim their rifles. Galloping alongside the wagon, Michael looks back and fires his revolver. Standing in the speeding wagon, a sergeant tries to detach its arched canvas covering. Mulcahy leans out, aims his rifle, and fires. An Indian warrior falls from his mount and tumbles in the dirt. Another warrior falls on top of him. While Quincannon works the horse's reins, Shattuck cuts the wagon's covering from its frame. Crouching below the billowing canvas, Mulcahy continues firing. An Indian's horse rears up, throws its rider, then tramples him and gallops away. Led by three riderless horses, the war party charges at top speed. Ahead of them, the wagon's canvas covering waves back and forth, blocking the sergeant's view of the approaching war party. Michael brandishes his saber and brings his horse alongside the wagon. He slices the ropes binding the canvas, and it falls away, giving the sergeants a shot. As the war party closes in, Michael swings his saber, spurring on the horses. In the distance, the platoon from Fort Apache appears, galloping hard across the desert. Leading the charge, Collingwood rides with his saber drawn, thrust out in front of him. Behind him, the bugler rides with his bugle held to his lips. Another soldier bears a flagstaff topped with the company's two-color flag. As they near the wagon and war party, the 30-man platoon divides into two sections, kicking up a massive dust cloud. The cloud thins, and the wagon appears, still charging forward. Michael and Sergeant Beaufort head off the wagon's lead horses and bring them to a halt. In the distance, the platoon rounds up the Indian warriors. Another day. Colonel Thursday, Captain York, and the sergeants ride to a desert outpost. Dogs scamper away as the troops approach a stone building with a low, sloped roof.
Bugler, raise those colors to full staff.
Yes, sir.
The bugler goes to a flagpole, kicking a whiskey bottle out of his path. He pulls on the flag cord and raises the stars and stripes. The other men check out the building.
Major!
This looks deserted.
He's here, all right. Meacham!
With the Colonel's permission, sir.
Mulcahy spits on his hands and grips the roof edge. He swings down and kicks the door in, then salutes Colonel Thursday.
The door is open, sir.
Inside is a dank trading post and storeroom.
Open the shutters, get the stench out of here.
Yes. Meacham!
York strides past a counter.
Meacham!
He kicks open a door and finds a gray-bearded man with a double-barreled shotgun.
Well, Mr. York.
Let's go, Meacham.
The captain escorts him into the other room, where Colonel Thursday waits. Beaufort strides off.
By your leave, sir.
Another exile in our wilderness.
Colonel Thursday, our new commanding officer.
Your servant, Mr. Thursday, and may the Lord...
Colonel Thursday, Mr. Meacham.
Oh, bless you, I pay no attention to military titles. I don't believe in titles of any kind. We're all his brothers, his children. Even these savages entrusted to my care, I feed them and clothe them.
And fill them full of rot-gut whiskey.
I have a license. Spirits have their uses. This is not a healthy climate. Perhaps the Colonel would like a drink after his ride. No? Your health.
He downs a glass.
Mr. Meacham, a band of Indians has left the reservation.
That's right. That Diablo and 30 others, the ungrateful dogs. I treat them well. I have goods for them to buy. Knives, calico,
cheap, shoddy trash.
No. Mr. Colonel Thirsty, you know how children are. They like their bright toys.
York brings out a gun.
Winchester seven-shot repeaters are not toys, York. Meacham.
I am attempting to question Mr. Meacham.
Yes, sir.
York marches to the door, where three of the sergeants wait near a crate of tools. York knocks on it.
Right, sir.
The sergeants take an axe and pickaxe outside.
Then there's no reason, to your knowledge, why a band of Apaches should go on the warpath?
Not the warpath. Misguided, maybe. Like wayward children, mister.
Two of my troopers are dead. Tortured to death.
Not by my Apaches. Some other raiding party, perhaps. How can you be sure?
We've taken Diablo and his band. What's left of them? They'll be here soon.
And you'll keep them here. You'll assign a troop to keep them here. That's what I've been telling Mr. York right along, and I leave it to you. How can I, one lone man, be responsible for all these savages? Now you see what's happened. Two of your men have been killed. Brave men serving their country as I am. And this wouldn't have happened if the high-handed Mr. York...
York cuffs him. Thursday glares.
Mr. Meacham is a representative of the United States government. Will be treated with due respect.
May I say something, sir?
What is it?
No troop or squadron or regiment's gonna keep the Apaches on this reservation unless they want to stay here. 5 years ago, we made a treaty with Cochise. He and his Chiricahuas and some of the other Apache bands came on the reservation. They wanted to live here in peace, and did for 2 years. And then Meacham here was sent by the Indian Ring.
That's a lie. I've been endorsed.
The dirtiest, most corrupt political group in our history. And then it began. Whiskey but no beef. Trinkets instead of blankets. The women degraded, the children sickly, and the men turning into drunken animals. So Cochise did the only thing a decent man could do. He left, took most of his people, and crossed the Rio Bravo into Mexico.
He broke his treaty.
Yes, rather than stay here and see his nation wiped out.
The law is the law, and I demand that you soldier boys enforce it.
Any demands you wish to make, you will make through official channels, Mr. Meacham. Do not again employ that word in my presence.
No offense, sir, no offense.
Ready, sir.
Lead the way. Come along, sir.
Where?
His storehouse.
There's nothing in there.
They head outside. Sergeant Mulcahy shows them to a stone shed.
Mr. Colonel Thursday, I protest.
Put it right.
Inside.
It's in these boxes.
It's my Bible, sir.
That's all.
Open them up.
Colonel Thursday notices a sliding weight scale. Setting the lead weight, he steps on the footpad. With clenched lips, he taps the weight down the beam, farther and farther.
What's this scale used for?
Weigh government beef rations.
I seem to have gained 75 pounds since I came to Arizona.
Shattuck hacks open a crate, revealing two Bibles on a shelf. He pulls out the shelf and finds two kegs hidden below. He bashes one with his rifle butt.
Bible, sir.
Sergeant, pour me some scripture.
Mulcahy dips a tin cup into the keg, scoops up a clear brew, then hands the cup to the colonel. Thursday takes a sip, then spits it out.
What's in this, brimstone and sulfur?
You know what it is, and I'm entitled to keep it.
Your license may permit you to keep a medicinal store of whiskey, but this is no whiskey.
Perhaps you're not used to frontier whiskey.
I don't know. I've tasted most everything. Sergeant, you a judge of whiskey?
Well, sir, some people say I am, and some say I'm not, sir.
Tell me what you make of this.
Mulcahy glances at Quincannon, then sips from the cup. Twisting his face in a disgusted frown, he looks Meacham up and down. Then hurriedly takes a big gulp. The brew splashes down his uniform. He swallows hard.
Well, it's better than no whiskey at all, sir.
Strike a match.
Yes, sir.
The thinly mustached Sergeant Beaufort lights a wooden match. Cupping his hands around the flame, he passes it to the colonel.
Since it doesn't appear to be whiskey...
The brew burns like oil.
And since it seems to be of highly inflammable and dangerous liquid, I find there's only one thing to do, Mr. Meacham. Destroy it.
I protest. All right, Washington, I'll have you busted.
Mr. Meacham, you're a blackguard, a liar, a hypocrite, and a stench in the nostrils of honest men. If it were in my power, I'd hang you from the nearest tree, leave your carcass for the buzzards. But as you are a representative of the United States government, I pledge you the protection and cooperation of my command. Good day, sir.
What about these Winchesters, sir?
York opens a crate filled with rifles.
The pins are bent. Sergeant Mulcahy, straighten them with this.
A mallet.
You heard what he said.
York makes a rifle.
Destroy it.
He strides outside after Colonel Thursday. Back in the storehouse, Sergeant Beaufort closes the door. Shattuck, Quincannon, and Mulcahy stand around the brew.
Destroy it, he says.
Each man gets a tin mug.
Well, boys, we've a man's work ahead of us this day.
One by one, the men fill their mugs from the keg. Mulcahy savors a long sip. Beside him, Quincannon swigs, then winces and spits. Beaufort swirls his drink around, then sniffs it. Shattuck swallows hard, then stands as if snapping to attention. Later, in Fort Apache's guardhouse, Mulcahy peers out a barred window and wipes his nose with his polka-dotted neckerchief. Outside, Sergeant Major O'Rourke strides over in his crisp uniform.
Unlock the door!
Michael!
Prisoners outside!
O'Rourke paces as the four scruffy sergeants shuffle wearily outside and line up. Mulcahy pulls up his suspenders.
Michael!
Quincannon slouches in his sock feet. His tousled hair sticks up.
Private Mulcahy! Private Shattuck! Private Quincannon! Private Wolfert! I'm ashamed of you, the holiest! You're a disgrace to your regiment! If there was a regulation for it, I'd make you take the Templars off!
Marshal.
O'Rourke glares.
Volunteers for the manure pile! Left! Please!
The hungover troopers pivot left.
Take them out of here!
They start off in single file. Two guards shouldering rifles march beside them.
And all together, men! There was Sergeant John McCafferty and...
The haggard, demoted soldiers plod across the dirt yard as relaxing troops look on. At the front of the line, Beaufort munches on a snack. Later, officers meet in the colonel's office.
Assuming you found Cochise, would he listen to you? Would he believe you?
Cochise knows me, sir. I've never lied to him. And if you can assure him decent treatment for his people...
I'll confess he interests me. In these Eastern newspapers, I hadn't realized Cochise was so well known.
Collingwood.
Oh, he's known. He's had the laugh on every troop in the Southwest these 3 years. Six campaigns, he's outgeneraled us, outfought us, and outrun us.
That's just the point, sir. There aren't enough troops in the whole territory to make Cochise come back. But one man, a man he trusts, might persuade him.
A carbine against his spine might be more persuasive.
I'll go in unarmed, sir. Can't fight my way in. Either walk in or...
A man who brought Cochise back. I'm for it, Captain. How many men will you need?
One, sir. Sergeant Beaufort.
Private Beaufort, sir.
Why him?
He speaks Spanish, so does Cochise. My Apache has his limits.
Shouldn't you take another officer instead?
Well, Sergeant Beaufort...
Private Beaufort, sir.
Private Beaufort was a major in the Confederate Army. An aide to Jeb Stuart.
I remember Cadet Stuart.
Quite.
He was... Were you saying something, Captain?
Well, I said quite, sir. I'd like to leave at once if the Colonel has no questions.
What?
Questions, sir?
No questions. Proceed, Captain. Take your ex-rebel.
Thank you.
That is all.
Later, Beaufort sits on horseback while York mounts a powerful bay.
Ready, Sergeant Beaufort?
Yes, sir. Anything is preferable to shoveling.
That's what I thought. Well, here we go.
Private Mulcahy! My compliments, sir!
Frowning, Mulcahy, Quincannon, and Shattuck watch them ride off.
Officer's pet. Officer's pet, that's what he is.
Mulcahy pushes a wheelbarrow away. The two guards shouldering rifles pace near Shattuck and Quincannon, who shovel manure. Out in the open desert, Captain York and Sergeant Beaufort gallop through sagebrush. Behind them, plateaus rise abruptly from the flatland. Spired buttes baking in the high sun cast short shadows. Guiding their horses at a leisurely run, the troopers rock in their saddles and descend a sandy hill into a valley. Side by side, they race along a dried-up stream bed. Our view rises above a cliff overlooking a deep, curving canyon. The terraced rim slopes into sheer cliffs that plunge down to a river. For miles, the gently flowing water carves a twisting course through the vast desert. On a bluff, Captain York and Sergeant Beaufort dismount. Dust clings to their dark uniforms as they rest, gazing out over the canyon.
How's your hangover?
Espantosa.
York gives him a flask.
Sir, you're the nicest Yankee I've ever known.
Beaufort holds up the flask.
Por la tierra de mi madre.
He takes a long swig, then swallows, shaking his head. York takes back the empty flask.
Well, let's go.
He throws it into the canyon. Later, Beaufort and York ride into the canyon. A knobby cliff wall towers above them as they charge into the river. Their husky mounts forge the current with great leaping strides. Halfway across, the deepening river soaks the men's legs. The horses plow forward, chest deep in water. Dripping, they reach the sandy bank. Later, at Fort Apache, the O'Rourkes eat dinner.
Quinn Cannon, if that's you, you can wait till payday. I'm not gonna...
Philadelphia opens the door. Michael springs to his feet.
Oh, having dinner? Well, yes, I will have a cup of tea. And if you urge me, I may even take a piece of pie.
Oh,
good evening, Lieutenant. I haven't been seeing much of you lately. Please don't stand.
Bill, Miss Thursday,
I had hoped you might call. You did leave your card, didn't you? This is your card, isn't it? And isn't it proper, Sergeant Major O'Rourke, for an officer to call after he's left his card?
Well, it would be missing, except that...
The Colonel has forbidden me to address you, Miss Thursday.
But you are addressing me, aren't you, Lieutenant? And if a young man hasn't enough gumption to address a young woman who even if her father is a colonel, well, I don't think he's as brave as I think he is. Do you, Mrs. O'Rourke?
No, I don't.
Ma'am, your father is Michael's commanding officer. His orders will be obeyed. Miss Thursday, I'm afraid you had best leave us.
Michael O'Rourke! Oh, sit down, dear. And you sit down yourself. And you, have you nothing to say? Or have you learned your manners entirely from this big bull of a man, your father?
There's much I'd say if I could get a word in edgewise. Miss Thursday, if I had any thought that it really mattered to you whether I spoke to you or not, but I couldn't believe you felt the same way about me.
And what way was that, Lieutenant?
Well,
Michael paces away, then returns and stands tall.
Miss Thursday, if you'll just step outside.
He opens the door and Philadelphia rises. Guadalupe rushes in.
Señorita, su papel coronel viene. Sabe que está hasta aquí. Viene muy enojado. The colonel, he come. He very angry. He knows she here.
Guadalupe peeks outside, then hurries off. Michael snaps to attention as Colonel Thursday strides in.
Come, Philadelphia. I'm here to bring you home.
I'm not ready to leave, Father. I've been invited to dinner.
Oh, won't you stay, Colonel?
Thank you, Mrs. O'Rourke. Another time, perhaps.
Well, at least allow me to take your hat.
I beg your pardon. Come, Phil.
Colonel Thursday, sir. I would like...
Mr. O'Rourke, I want no words with you at this time.
But, Colonel, sir...
You heard me, sir. Now, get out of here before I say something I may regret.
This is my home, Colonel Owen Thursday. And in my home, I will say who is to get out and who is to stay. And I will remind the Colonel that his presence here, uninvited, is contrary to Army regulations. Not to mention the code of a well-mannered man.
Dad, please. Colonel Thursday, sir, what I've been trying to tell you, sir, is that I love your daughter. And I ask her now in your presence to be my wife.
Yes, Michael.
She takes his arm.
I see. Philadelphia, I ask you to reconsider.
No, Father.
I tell you, this is not a proper or suitable marriage for you.
I can't believe that.
Sergeant Major O'Rourke, you will pardon me for speaking bluntly,
But as a non-commissioned officer, you are well aware of the barrier between your class and mine.
I am, sir.
But Michael's an officer. Not that it makes any difference.
It makes a difference in the Army, Phil. The sergeant major knows that, and his son should know it.
The Army, sir, is not the whole world.
No, but it's your world, and your mother's world, and my world. I'm not as young as I once was. With the colonel's permission, I'll put in for retirement.
That won't be necessary, Sergeant Major. Nor need you, mister, give up your profession. My daughter is not of legal age. She cannot marry without my consent.
I'll be of age in 2 years.
Sergeant Major, I beg your pardon for entering your quarters without invitation. Mr. O'Rourke, your pardon for my words. Come, Phil.
I'm not a child, and I love Michael.
I will arrange at once for your return to the East. You'll have 2 years to forget each other.
Philadelphia runs out into the night. Her father avoids Michael's piercing gaze.
Mrs. O'Rourke.
He honors her with a slight stiff bow.
My respects, ma'am.
She curtsies, and he strides out. Daytime. Under a thinly clouded sky, Captain York and Sergeant Beaufort ride across the desert. Gnarled, finger-like rock columns spire from mounds of dry earth, interrupting the vast flatland. York and Beaufort stop to gaze across the plain. The mustached sergeant wears his slouch hat with the brim curled up. York shades his eyes from the sun with his hat brim turned down, low across his brow. Sweat gleams on the captain's grimy, stubbled cheeks. York gets out his canteen, shakes it up, then hands it to Beaufort, who takes a big, thirst-quenching swallow. He hands the canteen back to York, and the captain finishes off the water. As he dries his lips, his head jerks left. He spots a bright flash at the base of a cliff, blinking intermittently. York and Beaufort slowly turn and look the other way. To their right, the plane rolls up to a squarish butte. A rapid flashing glare signals back. York scans the barren landscape, then hangs his canteen on his saddle. Beside him, Beaufort flies a light-colored bandana like a flag on a long stick pole.
Ready?
Ready.
They spur their horses into a run. Ahead of them, the flatland narrows between two rugged plateaus. York and Beaufort ride into a canyon, their cantering horses kicking up dust. Ragged boulders and slabs of rock edge the sandy banks of a dried-up stream bed. As the cavalrymen ride side by side, the trail winds under a lofty cliff. On a ledge, two Apache sentries watch York and Beaufort ride below. On a higher outcropping, another Apache waits motionlessly, holding a rifle. As the soldiers ride on, 24 Apaches sit on the bank of the dry stream bed. Above them, tribesmen on horseback keep watch from a broad rock shelf overlooking the canyon. Perched on ledges and boulders, more Apaches watch York and Beaufort reach the end of the trail, where two men with flowing black hair stand with rifles. The troopers dismount, and the riflemen hold their horses. Beaufort carries the flag beside Captain York as they stride slowly down a dirt path toward three tribal leaders. A silver-haired chief stands with a blanket draped over his arm. York and Beaufort exchange a quick glance. Then the sergeant raises his right hand in greeting, his palm open toward the chief.
Buenas tardes, ilustre jefe.
The chief raises his hand in reply.
Buenas tardes, not honey.
Uno de los jefes de las fuerzas del gobierno de los Estados Unidos, el capitán York.
York straightens and salutes. Cochise looks him up and down. A leathery-faced man studies them. Crow's feet wrinkle at the corners of his narrowed eyes. York steps forward and extends both hands, palms down. Cochise lays a hand on top of them, and a gradual, tight-lipped smile brightens the captain's face.
Buenas tardes, jefe.
Buenas tardes.
At Fort Apache, Sergeant Major O'Rourke watches troopers bring a keg into the dance hall.
Put the beer right back there on the table, Wes. One on each ear.
The band arrives.
Come on, step lively, step lively. Passmeyer, one sour note out of you tonight, and back you go shoeing horses. Same course for you tonight.
The musicians take their seats on a raised platform. Mulcahy, Quincannon, and Shattuck arrive in dress uniforms and stand at stiff attention before O'Rourke. The sergeant major sniffs their breath and sizes them up.
Now you've got your stripes back, I'll expect each one of you to be on your best behavior tonight and set a good example for the men.
Oh, don't worry, Michael, me darling. We'll be the morals of decorum. Now, where's the punch?
Mulcahy, I tell you. Mulcahy, you'll not be spiking the refreshments this year like you did last.
All just one bottle.
No, sir. Michael. Ah, go on, the holiest.
They head for the punch. The doctor arrives.
Good evening, O'Rourke.
Good evening, Doctor.
And Mrs. O'Rourke. It's a fine night for a dance. Clear and dry.
Yes, sir.
He brings whiskey.
Right over there, sir.
Another couple arrives.
Good evening, O'Rourke.
Good evening, sir.
And Mrs. O'Rourke.
Oh, Sergeant Major, you have no idea how I've been looking forward to tonight. I'm forever telling the captain that it's the non-commissioned officer's dance that is the nicest dance. Don't you think so, Mrs. O'Rourke?
Well, of course I do.
And Sergeant Major, will you please claim me for a dance?
With the greatest of pleasure, ma'am.
By the way, I'd like to have...
Right over there, sir.
He brings whiskey to the punch. Later, ladies and gentlemen applaud the portly doctor as he approaches the band platform carrying a paper fan. The conductor helps him up.
Thank you, Crossfire. Again, on behalf of the officers of Fort Apache, I wish to thank the non-commissioned officers and their ladies for this grand party. The flure is exquisite, and the plunge, wow. Oh, good evening, Crossfire. And so, as is customary at Fort Apache, the commanding officer, Colonel Owen Thursday, will lead out the wife of our Sergeant Major, the charming Mrs. Michael O'Rourke.
The Colonel, tall and lean in his formal button-down uniform, glances at his daughter, then rises. Wearing his silver-streaked hair slicked back, he strides over to Mrs. O'Rourke, sitting upright in her tight bodiced gown. Behind her, her husband straightens and meets the Colonel's rigid gaze.
With your permission, Mrs. O'Rourke, may I have the honor?
It will be a pleasure, Colonel Thursday.
She stands and loops her hand around his elbow.
And now, Sergeant Major O'Rourke will lead out the Colonel's lady. In this case, his lovely daughter, Miss Philadelphia Thursday.
Philadelphia wears a flowing gown with short, ruffled sleeves. The gray-haired Sergeant Major bows. She curtsies, then rests her hand at his elbow.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, quickly, take your partners for the grand march.
Mulcahy trips an eager soldier. Belly down on the floor, the short soldier watches the other men scramble for partners. Sergeant Mulcahy bows to Mrs. Collingwood. She curtsies, then takes his arm. As they cross the room, they encounter the bearded trader, Meacham.
Get out of my way, Meacham, or I'll break both your legs.
Of course, with your permission.
He bows and smiles at Mrs. Collingwood, then escorts her to a line of couples. On the band platform, the doctor stands beside the conductor. At the front of the line, Mrs. O'Rourke stands beside Colonel Thursday, holding his arm. He leads her forward with small marching steps, and the rest of the line follows. At the end of the hall, Mrs. O'Rourke curtsies, then turns left with the colonel. Behind them, Philadelphia curtsies, then she and the sergeant major break right. The following couples alternate, dividing into two lines which circle around the room. The lead couples meet in step. Mrs. O'Rourke takes her husband's arm, joining their pairs. As they march down the middle, Philadelphia smiles at her stern-faced father. At the end of the room, the linked couples fan out in different directions, first left, then right. Split in two lines, the quartets mince back the other way. At the head of the room, the leading groups on the left and right join, forming a single row of eight. Arm in arm, they march. Philadelphia glances merrily along the line of stern faces. Mulcahy flashes Mrs. Collingwood a toothy grin. Colonel Thursday bows politely to Mrs. O'Rourke, then notices people clearing the floor. Mrs. O'Rourke lifts her hands, inviting him to dance. He hesitates, then takes her in his stiff arms and starts to two-step with a blank, distant gaze. As they sidestep up the floor, Sergeant Major O'Rourke leads Philadelphia in a few tight spins. Light on her feet, she beams. The flowing skirt of her gown swirls around her ankles. Her father and Mrs. O'Rourke glide across the floor with quick, bouncing steps. Standing around the dance floor, ladies and gentlemen admire the whirling couples. Philadelphia shares a carefree smile with her partner, while her father concentrates on spinning Mrs. O'Rourke in a series of tight turns. With graceful ease, they dip their arms and kick up their toes. As they twirl across the floor in broad circles, couples join them. Sergeant Mulcahy awkwardly leads Mrs. Collingwood in an off-rhythm waltz. Outside, Captain York and Sergeant Beaufort dismount their sweaty horses.
Walk them around and rub them down, will you, Tom?
They stride over to the dance hall, where a warm light spills out the open door as couples waltz. The dusty men step stiffly inside, their cheeks darkened by scruffy whiskers. Against the wall, Colonel Thursday sits looking at his pocket watch.
Captain York!
The dancing stops. York shakes a few hands as he approaches the colonel.
Well, Cochise has crossed the river, sir. He's coming in with all his people. Wants to talk peace.
He's returned to American soil?
Yes, sir. And now, with the colonel's permission, I'd like to shake some of this Mexican dobe dust and get back to the dance.
There'll be no time for that, Captain. The regiment moves out at dawn.
The regiment? Cochise says he'll meet with you and me and meet you. We'll take a small detail and go unarmed. I've arranged a rendezvous this side of the Dragoons.
Sergeant Major, you'll stop the dance. That's the word of the first sergeant. Prepare their troops to march at dawn. Troop commanders will oblige me by meeting at headquarters at once.
Colonel, if you send out the regiment, Cochise will think I've tricked him.
Exactly. We have tricked him. Tricked him into returning to American soil, and I intend to see that he stays here.
Colonel Thursday, I gave my word to Cochise. No man is going to make a liar out of me, sir.
Your word to a breech-clouded savage, an illiterate, uncivilized murderer and treaty breaker? There's no question of honor, sir, between an American officer and Cochise.
There is to me, sir.
Captain York, you may have commanded your own regiment in the late war, but so long as you command a troop in mine, you will obey my orders. You have your instructions, Sergeant Major.
Thursday marches off, followed by a few officers. Glaring, York slaps his hat against his thigh, then leaves. Sergeant Major O'Rourke remains.
Ladies and gentlemen, officers and non-commissioned officers, your attention, please. By order of the commanding officer, this night's entertainment will conclude with the playing of the next dance. After the dance, all first sergeants, quartermasters, saddler sergeants, farriers, cooks, and bakers, report to me at headquarters. Ladies and gentlemen, the non-commissioned officers of Fort Apache offer their deep regrets. And on their behalf, I wish to thank you for attending this dance. Krausmeier, if you please.
Mrs. O'Rourke takes her husband's arm and walks him out. Beaufort flings his hat across the room, then eagerly drinks from the punch bowl ladle. His eyes whiten. Mulcahy smiles.
Is it to your taste, Johnny, darling?
Grinning, Quincannon and Shattuck fill their glasses. Mulcahy waits for Beaufort to refill his ladle, then drinks straight from the punch bowl. Outside, on the porch, Philadelphia sneaks off with Michael. She takes the young lieutenant's hat, then slips into his arms for a private dance. They waltz, their eyes locked in an adoring stare. They sway, embracing in the shadows. Wrapped in each other's arms, they kiss. Morning. Uniformed troopers jog past the bugler with their sabers. Later, the mounted regiment, spread out in a few neat lines, waits at attention. The flag bearers ride front and center. On a balcony overlooking the grounds, Philadelphia, Mrs. Collingwood, and Mrs. O'Rourke wear shawls around their shoulders. They somberly watch the assembly. Colonel Thursday, riding a husky, well-groomed horse, salutes his men. The brim of his kepi shades his eyes. The white cloth hanging from the back shades his neck from the bright sun.
Column of fours! First troop, fours left!
Fours left!
The colonel rides off, followed by his officers.
Fours left! Oh!
Captain Collingwood leads a troop after the colonel, while Captain York sits tall on his bay mount.
Fours left!
Another troop, riding side by side in fours, follows Captain York. Up ahead, Colonel Thursday leads the regiment at a walk. An American flag flutters high above the fort as the last troop falls out behind the others. At the head of the column, Colonel York throws a white-gloved salute. On the balcony, Mrs. O'Rourke, Mrs. Collingwood, and Philadelphia watch the regiment file out of the yard. As Captain York rides past them, he doffs his hat. On the balcony, an older woman turns away. A messenger rushes up to the women still watching.
Collingwood! Excuse me, ma'am. It's Captain Collingwood's transfer, ma'am. It just came through.
She grins.
Oh, run, run, or send someone after. Call him back.
Yes, Aunt Emily. I don't know.
What is there to know? Go get him!
Sam's no coward. He never was.
Who's talking about cowardice?
Meanwhile, the cavalry's supply train brings up the rear. On the bench of a covered wagon, the doctor doffs his hat.
Don't be a fool, woman.
Tom, get mounted. Go bring Captain Collingwood back.
No. Keep this for the captain's return.
Yes, ma'am.
He leaves with a note, and Mrs. Collingwood turns her gaze to the horizon. Philadelphia reassuringly takes her hand. Dark, lofty clouds tower above them. Under the leaden sky, Colonel Thursday leads his men across the desert plain. Distant buttes rise out of the bleak landscape, hazy in a gray fog. The regiment moves along at an easy trot, troopers riding four across behind their captains. At the rear of the column, the supply train of covered wagons keeps pace. At Fort Apache, Mrs. Collingwood watches with Philadelphia and Mrs. O'Rourke.
I can't see him. All I can see is the flags.
With her eyes glued on the horizon, she clutches her shawl. Later, sunlight warms the open country as Colonel Thursday leads his regiment along a dusty trail. The arid land, bristling with sagebrush, rolls gently toward a broad, flat-topped plateau. Alongside the bugler, on a pinto pony, rides Meacham, the trader. Behind them, the cavalrymen ride two and three across. The swallow-tailed guidon flag of Troop C flutters in the breeze. At the rear of the column, the supply train moves away from a rugged butte. Up ahead, Colonel Thursday trots up a short, steep knob. He stops his mount and raises his right hand.
Squadron! Halt! Yeah!
Farther along, two riders appear on a hill. One carries a flag and pumps it up and down. The other rider leaves the flag bearer and gallops toward the column. Nearing, he pulls up on his reins. It's Sergeant Beaufort.
It's the encampment, sir. Must be about a mile up. 300 wiki-ups or more.
Very good. Bugler, my compliments to Captain York. Have him report to me.
Yes, sir.
The bugler gallops down the column and finds York with his troop. The captain rides to the head of the line where Colonel Thursday waits, gazing across the plain. York squints under the brim of his slouch hat.
Yes?
Is that approximately where you were to meet Cochise, Captain?
Just about.
My officers will address me as Sir, Captain York.
Yes, sir. Will that be all, sir?
It will not. I propose, Captain York, to deploy the men, two troops to the north, one to the east. We will then converge on the encampment.
I wouldn't do that, sir.
I'm not asking your advice, Captain. I'm merely stating.
The Apaches, sir, are neither to the north nor the east, nor are they in their encampment. But if you'd have been watching the dust swirls to the south like most of us, you'd see that they're right there.
He points. In the distance, a large band of Apaches on horseback crests a ridge. They come to a standstill at the foot of a butte. In front of the tribe, Cochise sits on a pinto pony. A kerchief holds back his flowing silver hair. Beside him, a broad-featured man holds a white flag. York points.
That's Alcazay. They outnumber us 4-1. Do we talk or fight?
You seem easily impressed by numbers, Captain.
Studying the distant Apaches, Thursday walks his horse a few steps forward, then turns his beady eyes on York.
However, I'll honor your word to Cochise. Tell him we've come to talk.
York spurs his horse ahead.
Right on!
The soldier carrying the troop's pennant joins him. Together, they race across the plain toward the Apaches. On the ridge, Cochise raises his hand, keeping his men in position, then sends two riders ahead. The Apaches, one bearing the white flag, ride toward York and the guidon. The four envoys meet. Colonel Thursday watches the Apache tribe lined up in full view a few hundred yards away. Cochise stares back, squinting into the sun. Later, the American flag ripples in a breeze near the bugler. Colonel Thursday and an entourage of a half dozen men stride on foot toward the Apaches. Halfway between the opposing legions, Cochise and four other Apaches meet them. Captain York raises his right hand in greeting.
Buenas tardes.
Buenas tardes.
Gentlemen, I have the honor to present the great hereditary war chief of the Apache nation, Cochise.
Get on with it, Captain.
Take over, Beaufort.
Thursday sits as Beaufort steps up.
Tengo el honor, ilustre jefe, de presentarle al distinguido comandante de nuestro regimiento, el coronel Thursday, el capitán Collingwood.
Good afternoon.
El capitán York. Y el señor Meacham, que usted ya conoce. Gentlemen, this is Alcazay, head of the White Mountain Apaches, Satanta of the Mescaleros, and the Chiricahua medicine man, named Jerome in our language, but in Spanish, Geronimo.
I'll tell him to get on with it, Beaufort.
El coronel invita a hablar.
Cochise steps forward and touches his chest.
Los Apaches son una gran raza. Orgullosos. Y no hemos nacido para vivir esclavizados. Su nación nos hizo la guerra y no nos derrotó.
What's he saying?
That the Apaches are a great race, sir. They've never been conquered.
Pero una nación no debe estar siempre en guerra.
But it is not well for a nation to be always at war.
Los jóvenes mueren.
The young men die.
Las mujeres entonan canciones tristes.
The women sing sad songs.
Y los viejos pasan hambres en el invierno.
And the old ones are hungry in the winter.
Por eso, con mi gente, me fui de los cerros.
And so I led my people from the hills.
Entonces vino ese hombre.
And then came this man.
Meacham.
Un hombre malvado, que no dice la verdad, y que ha sembrado la enfermedad y el vicio en toda mi nación.
What did he say?
Well, sir, a free translation would be that Meacham's a yellow-bellied polecat of dubious antecedents and conjectural progeny. Coach's his words, of course, sir, not mine.
It's a matter of opinion.
Thursday glances at Meacham.
Es peor que la guerra.
He is worse than war.
No mata solo a los hombres.
He not only killed the men.
También a las mujeres.
But the women.
A los niños.
And the children.
Y a los viejos.
And the old ones.
Esperábamos que nuestro gran padre blanco nos protegiera.
We looked to the great white father for protection.
Él nos dio una muerte lenta.
He gave a slow death.
No regresaremos a su posesión.
We will not return to your reservation.
Mientras esté ese hombre.
While that man is there.
O otro como él.
Or anyone like him.
Quítelo. Y hablaremos de paz.
Send him away and we will speak of peace.
Si se queda.
If you do not send him away.
Habrá guerra.
There will be war.
Cochise steps closer to the colonel.
Y por cada uno de nosotros que usted mate.
And for each one of us that you kill.
Morirán 10 hombres blancos.
10 white men will die.
Are you threatening
Don't
us?
Don't interrupt, sir.
I'll not sit here and be threatened. Beaufort.
No preliminary nonsense with him. No ceremonial phrasing. Straight from the shoulders, I tell you. Do you hear me? They're a recalcitrant swine. They must feel it.
He's only speaking the truth, sir.
Is there anyone in this regiment that understands an order when it's given?
What does the colonel wish me to say, sir?
Tell them I find them without honor.
El coronel lo encuentra sin honor.
Tell them they're not talking to me, but to the United States government.
No le está hablando a él, sino al gobierno americano.
Tell them that government orders them to return to their reservation.
El gobierno le ordena que regrese a su reservación.
And tell them if they have not started by dawn, we will attack.
Y le da de
tell them that.
Alba, si no atacará.
Thursday marches off. Cochise stalks away. York and Beaufort grimly watch as mounted Apaches meet the tribal leaders with horses. Captain York studies the tribe, amassed on horseback at the foot of a looming butte. Tapping his leather gloves against his leg, he draws a heavy breath, then rejoins the regiment. Beaufort follows. Across the valley, a mounted Apache waves a black cloth in circles above his head. As he gallops toward the massive butte, warriors follow, churning up a cloud of dust. Later, furrowed bands of clouds hang low in the sky. At the head of the cavalry regiment, Colonel Thursday stops his horse. Behind him, his mounted troops hold their position. Captains Collingwood and York sit bolt upright in their saddles. Colonel Thursday stares across the valley.
Bugler, sound forward.
Forward! Forward! Power!
Spread across the plain in one long row, the regiment falls out. They press forward at a staunch walk. On a ridge, Cochise joins four Apaches cradling Winchester rifles. They watch the approaching cavalry. Silhouetted in the distance, the column files down an arid slope. Cochise picks up a handful of dirt and tosses it into the wind. Holding a blanket draped over his arm, he stalks off. In the valley, Colonel Thursday rides at the front of the cavalry column, ahead of the bugler. Two flag bearers follow. At the base of a tall, craggy spire, the troops hold position while the officers and Meacham gallop ahead. They stop on a rise. The sun beats strong on their dark uniforms. A gentle breeze ruffles their neckerchiefs. Colonel Thursday peers through a pair of binoculars.
I don't see them, not a one.
Well, they're down there, sir, among the rocks.
Thursday lowers his binoculars.
Have you seen them, Captain?
I don't have to, I know.
How?
As if I were Cochise, that's where I'd take up position.
And that dust cloud beyond?
It's an Apache trick. Probably squaws and children dragging mesquite.
Very ingenious, Captain. You make me suspect your Cochise has studied under Alexander the Great, or Bonaparte at the least.
Gentlemen, mount your troops. We're charging the column of fours.
Mounted in fours? That's suicide, Colonel. I tell you, they're down there.
Captain York, you're relieved of command of your troop. There's no room in this regiment for a coward.
York throws down his glove.
At your service, sir.
Bugler, pick up Captain York's gauntlet.
Yes, sir.
The bugler dismounts, picks up the glove, then climbs back on his horse. York sits on his powerful steed, squarely facing the officers. The bugler returns his glove. Colonel Thursday levels a flinty glare.
I'm no duelist, Captain. I will decide whether I will answer you with pistols or a general court-martial. You will remain on the ridge, in safety, with the supply train. Take O'Rourke with you.
With a stern, unflinching gaze, York gallops back to the column. Thursday's eyes flicker.
Gentlemen, you have your orders. Are there any other questions?
Collingwood stares blankly ahead, then meets the colonel's glance.
Captain Collingwood?
No questions, Owen.
Gentlemen, join your troops.
The remaining captains return to the column, while Thursday, the bugler, and an officer trot ahead onto a rise. Now, Captain York rides over to the barrel-chested Sergeant O'Rourke.
A charge, mounted in fours.
Ah, the madman.
And I'm to stay with the wagon train. And take O'Rourke with me.
You'll find Lieutenant O'Rourke with his troops, sir. And thank you.
Good luck.
York salutes the flag bearers.
Good luck, man.
Thank you, sir.
At the rear of the column, with Troop B, York finds young Michael.
Lieutenant O'Rourke,
follow me.
But the troops, sir.
Don't argue. Mulcahy, take over.
Captain York, our...
Get out of here, you scoot! Or I'll put your crossbeam and build the fence on you. Get out now. As you were, men.
Mulcahy draws his saber. York gallops down the column and doffs his hat.
Good luck, Beecher! Wheel the wagons! Get him on the ridge!
The supply train rolls out, escorted by mounted troopers. Covered wagons drawn by four husky draft horses barrel across the plain. The wooden wheels bounce over the rough terrain. Dust swirls around the drivers as they brace themselves on footrests and haul back on the reins, bringing the wagons to a stop on a ridge. Captain York watches his men assemble.
Get those teams off! All right, break out the big shell on with those horses!
As the last wagons arrive, soldiers unhitch the draft teams. Other troopers start to dig with shovels and pickaxes. Captain York peers down into the sun-baked valley where Colonel Thursday leads his regiment in a charge. A billowing cloud of dust engulfs the galloping riders. The bugler races after the colonel, followed by the flag bearers. One flies the stars and stripes, the other a solid flag emblazoned with an eagle. The mustached colonel leans forward in his rocking saddle as he rides past a bank of sandstone mesas. Leading a group at the rear of the column, Captain Collingwood wields a saber in his right hand. His hat flies off in the wind. Back on the ridge, Captain York looks through binoculars. Under a cloud-streaked sky, Apaches ride out of a canyon. They rein their horses to a halt on the dry riverbed. Colonel Thursday leads his men forward at breakneck speed. The bugler slumps off his horse. Storming soldiers brandish their sabers. The guidon for Troop B tumbles under his horse. Up front, the flag bearers keep pace with the bugler's riderless horse. The Apaches retreat into the canyon, and Thursday pursues. Cavalry enters the wide mouth of the steep-walled canyon. On the ridge, Captain York slowly lowers his binoculars. Clenching his lips, he throws down a bandana. At the mouth of the canyon, a rear troop spreads out over a rise. Farther along, Apaches wait on a cliff, their rifles poised and ready. Sheltered behind boulders and squatting on ledges, the long-haired warriors stare down the barrels of their Winchesters. Below, on the narrow, winding riverbed, the cavalry gallops into view. Colonel Thursday falls off his horse. His men race past into the Apaches' firing range. A soldier rolls off his mount as the barrage continues. In the lead, the flag bearers rein in their horses. A sheer wall blocks their path. The trapped cavalrymen cluster together. The Apache warriors, shrouded in gun smoke, continue firing from their rocky heights. A trooper lurches off his horse, rolls to a stop, and lies still, face down. More hit soldiers crumple, pulling down their mounts as they fall to the ground. The horses spring to their feet, leaving their wounded riders behind. Now, Colonel Thursday struggles to his knees on the canyon floor. Panting in the sun, he takes off his kepi and feels his heaving chest. Another wave of gunfire drops a half dozen soldiers. As they writhe in the dirt, the Apaches cock their rifles and fire again. A captain reaches the dead end, then waves his saber in a circle over his head, rounding up his men. He leads them back out of the canyon, leaving their dead. A few of the soldiers, fleeing amid dozens of riderless horses, fire their pistols toward the cliffs. On the ridge, Captain York hands Michael the binoculars, and the young lieutenant grimly watches the massacre. In the canyon, two dozen troopers dismount under heavy fire. Michael, his cheeks darkened by scruffy whiskers, lowers the binoculars and squints into the sun. In the canyon, the cavalrymen scramble for cover in a shallow dirt pit. Their saddled horses gallop off. On the ridge, York takes the binoculars from Michael.
Carry on, boy.
Michael turns his horse away, his lean face drawn with grief. York stares down at the canyon, where Captain Collingwood and Sergeant O'Rourke stand by their men, firing up at the cliffs. Up on the ridge with a supply caravan, Captain York pushes over a covered wagon. Soldiers tip over the remaining wagons, then position themselves behind the wagon chassis under the giant spoked wheels. Aiming their carbine rifles toward the canyon, they wait. York rides out in front of the makeshift encampment.
Make it!
Michael hurries over on his sleek bay mount.
Get to Fort Grant. Tell them where we are. Tell them we may still be alive if they hurry. Move!
The lieutenant gallops off.
And marry that girl!
Hunkered in the shallow pit, troopers fire at the cliffs. On the ridge, York braces one arm on the hindquarters of his horse to steady himself, then peers through binoculars. In the canyon, Colonel Thursday staggers as fleeing soldiers and riderless horses race by him.
Trooper!
Captain York watches as Thursday hobbles on the fringe of the fleeing stampede.
Trooper!
Blood trickles down the colonel's dirt-smudged forehead. He tries to grab a passing horse, but gets flung to the ground.
Stand by your guns, man. Stand by your guns! Flaherty, you're in charge. I'll be back.
York takes off down the ridge. Rocking in the saddle with his horse's pounding gait, he tears down a dusty slope and finds Colonel Thursday lying on the ground near a boulder. Quickly dismounting, York kneels and fans the colonel's weary face. Thursday gasps for air, his hair wet with sweat. York holds him up.
We've dug in on the ridge, sir. Plenty of water and ammunition. I've sent a courier to Fort Grant. They can only hold out. Here, get on my horse.
York helps him up, then over to the left side of his strong mount. Thursday wearily takes hold of the saddle horn and lifts his boot into the stirrup. York boosts him into the saddle.
Trouble you for your saber, Captain.
My saber?
I must rejoin my command.
Command is wiped out, sir. There's nothing we can do about it.
I'm not asking your opinion, Captain York. When you command this regiment, and you probably will, command it. Your saber, sir.
York offers it, hilt first.
Any questions, Captain?
The colonel spurs the horse into a gallop and rides back into the dusty canyon. Through narrowed eyes, York stares after him. Sweat glistens on his cheek.
No questions.
The colonel barrels across a ridge, then maneuvers his horse down a talus slope into the valley, where his men take cover in the shallow pit. Bouncing limply in the saddle, he rides over, dismounts, and staggers into the pit. Sergeant O'Rourke catches him as he starts to fall. Captain Collingwood rushes over. Supporting the colonel, he brings a canteen to Thursday's lips. The colonel drinks thirstily, dribbling water down his shirt. With heavy breaths, he wearily meets Collingwood's gaze.
This time you were late, Owen.
And my apologies.
Collingwood lifts Thursday to his feet, supports him while he gets his balance, then hurries off. Sergeant O'Rourke holds out a pistol. Colonel Thursday takes it in his white-gloved hand.
Sergeant Major O'Rourke, my apologies, sir.
You can save them, sir, for our grandchildren.
O'Rourke kneels in the dirt with his carbine. Thursday strides slowly among his haggard men. Two soldiers aim their rifles at the cliffs while a few injured men rest in the hot sun. A breeze stirs three flags staked in the dirt, the Stars and Stripes, the guidon for Troop B, and the flag emblazoned with an eagle. One soldier helps another to his feet as most of the cavalrymen stand and fix their heavy eyes down the canyon. Hundreds of mounted Apaches storm across the plain toward the canyon. The trapped cavalrymen turn their dozen guns on the war party which surrounds them. Colonel Thursday valiantly fires his pistol as warriors flow past. Soldiers collapse. An Apache plucks the guidon out of the ground and rides off. Dust swirls over the soldiers' bodies. Back on the ridge, Captain York stands with a few armed troopers. Behind him, more men duck behind the overturned wagons, their carbines aimed toward the canyon. York watches the Apaches crest a distant rise, headed his way.
Hold your fire, men. Hold your fire.
The soldiers remain still. The Apache war party comes to a dusty halt 100 yards away. Captain York draws a heavy breath. Cochise rides forward on a pinto pony, carrying the guidon for Troop B. York undoes his gun belt and lets it fall to the ground. The captain strides forward, his gait firm and steady. Cochise spurs his pony into a trot. A swirling mantle of dust shrouds the two men as they meet halfway between the two warring parties. Cochise spikes the guidon into the ground, then turns and rides back to his tribe. Amid the swelling dust, the captain's dark silhouette stands motionless beside the fluttering flag. Later, at Fort Apache, the guidon flag of Troop B stands beside a stately portrait of Colonel Thursday. A sheathed saber gleams above a plaque. York paces the office.
However, gentlemen, I warn you, this may be a long campaign. May be weeks before you have any headlines for your newspapers.
If we catch Geronimo, that'll be headline enough, Colonel York.
And more glory for your regiment.
A slick-haired journalist steps over to Thursday's portrait and rubs the polished scabbard of the colonel's saber.
He must have been a great man. And a great soldier.
York, clasping his hands behind his back, looks around the room.
No man died more gallantly. Nor won more honor for his regiment.
Of course, you're familiar with the famous painting of Thursday's Charge, sir.
Yes, I saw it when last in Washington.
That was a magnificent work. There were these massed columns of Apaches in their war paint and feather bonnets. And here was Thursday leading his men in that heroic charge.
Correct in every detail.
He's become almost a legend already. He's the hero of every schoolboy in America.
But what of the men who died with him? What of Collingworth and...
Collingwood.
Oh, of course, Collingwood.
That's the ironic part of it. We always remember the Thursdays, but the others are forgotten.
You're wrong there. They aren't forgotten because they haven't died. They're living. Right out there. Collingwood and the rest. And they'll keep on living as long as the regiment lives. Their pay is $13 a month, and their diet beans and hay. Maybe horse meat before this campaign is over. Fight over cards or rot-gut whiskey, but share the last drop in their canteens. Their faces may change, their names, but they're there. They're the regiment, the regular army. Now and 50 years from now. They're better men than they used to be. Thursday did that. He made it a command to be proud of.
The command is formed, sir.
Thank you, Sergeant Major. Now it's time to move. Questions, gentlemen?
Thank you very much, Colonel.
They leave the office.
Gentlemen, this is my adjutant, Lieutenant O'Rourke, who will take care of you.
Gentlemen.
Mrs. Michael O'Rourke, General Thursday's daughter.
How do you do?
And the Mrs. O'Rourke.
York picks up a toddler.
And this is Michael Thursday York O'Rourke. The best man in the regiment, aren't you, you scut?
He puts baby Michael in his grandma's arms. Philadelphia, wearing a white ruffled blouse and a long plaid skirt, watches Colonel York put on a kepi. Hanging from the back of the cap, the white suncloth drapes over his shoulders. York strides outside, followed by the four journalists. Michael O'Rourke embraces his wife, and they kiss. Outside, York climbs on his horse and faces a legion of mounted cavalrymen. A bugler rides behind Colonel York, who salutes. Behind the flag bearers, the troopers fall out in threes. Standing with Mrs. O'Rourke, Philadelphia holds her young son, Michael. Puffy white clouds float above them as they watch the cavalry ride off. On the wide open plain, Colonel York leads the column in a slow, easy trot. Bands of wispy, sun-streaked clouds glint overhead. A title appears, The End.